observing the excitement.
take your time. And remember, the voice of the person, though sitting close at hand, it is valuable to remember that your good voice carries to the person who is furthest away from you in the hall. So it's not easy, but and for some that is a little difficult, then leave it to those of you in the far realms to move a little bit closer. Always find seats closer if it's a little hard to hear, but hopefully it will be easy. Yes, sir.
So I wanted to know, how does the practice of vipassana and body of wisdom go alongside with practicing such arts as yoga or tai chi, or like being active, entering a posture, trying to make a structure, a balanced structure, let's say, balancing your sides or whatever?
Let me ask Elizabeth first. What's the background in the world of vipassana, in the world of insight meditation for you? How much contact have you had?
I've had 3 Goenka courses, in which such questions were answered. At least I asked about Tai Chi, and I was told that they don't go alongside. They said yoga, maybe, but I didn't practice yoga back then. No. After they told me Tai Chi, no, so I turned into yoga. But I still love Tai Chi. So.
All right. So, you've sat 3 of the Goenka courses. A number of you, of course, in the hall here sat at Goenka courses, and they have reputation or known for being rather strict, keeping to a rather tight discipline of the sitting form, etc., and also have the view of not doing anything else but sit and sweep, basically, isn't it? Mostly. Yeah. So you sat 3 Goenka courses. What were the benefits? Any benefits?
First time, the pain went away.
The pain. Where did you have the pain?
Joints, back, chronic, my life.
All right.
Second time, I expected the pains to go away again, so they didn't.
Right.
That was the lesson.
Yes.
Third time, I told you about what went on, but I decided I'm not going to do it again.
All right.
And then
okay.
I came here.
So, at the moment, you're at number 1, are you, with this play? All right. So, any other kind of contact with meditation or and Tai Chi and yoga?
I've been practicing Qigong standing meditation on and off for a couple of years. I've gained some benefit, but it was a very dear price, social and physical.
Why? Explain both. Why was this is Tai Chi, you said?
Yeah, it's a part
Qigong.
Of Tai Chi practice, yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm curious, why the social price and why the physical?
Well, the social price is because, you know, the climate in Israel is kind of hot and humid, especially in Tel Aviv area. So if you want to practice without getting dehydrated, you have to wake up early in the morning.
Ah.
So you have to go to sleep early.
All right. I've not heard this before, but so no nightlife. Gosh, it's a hard price. Go on.
Well, I'm living in Tel Aviv, you see, and the physical was, yes. Well, I still don't know. I didn't quite have a teacher to consult with, because no. My teacher was this Russian guy that he had it really, like, he wanted people to train like he did when he was 12 years old. And,
and how was that? In which way was that?
I don't know, he was standing with his knees bent at 90% for a couple of hours a day, and his teacher was hitting him with a bamboo stick and stuff. I'm not as young, you know,
no.
as he was. And the pain.
So, let me be clear. First of all, you pick a Vipassana course where it's sit in pain. And then you find a Tai Chi teacher who wants you to stand, and stand in pain.
True. Well, it's my
a hard life. And no social life. They have this statement in America, three strikes and you're out. All right. So let's get to the first one for a moment. The teacher, or the assistant teacher at the Govinka retreat says not to use Tai Chi or yoga, etc. What was the explanation for the view? This is the view. What's the explanation for that? What were you told?
Asking about Tai Chi, they said that because you're dealing with energy,
yes.
Because I guess you're not passive and observing, and you try to be active, to have a direction, it's not a good idea. But practicing yoga, I also noticed that I have, well, at least where I studied and to my extent of understanding, I also try to...
Can you hear it right in the back?
To have an intention, sorry, to balance the two sides of the body, or,
yes.
I don't know, some sort of visualizations as to the vectors going in and out in the space. But I'm still fresh to this, so...
All right. So I just want to get it clear, because there is a view which is expressed. I do think it's worth some looking at. So the view is that somehow movement, such as Tai Chi, such as yoga, does influence and affect the energies. And the view is in some way that this is unhelpful. Is that it?
I think they meant that because I'm trying, I have an intention.
Yes.
In the movement, I'm trying to, let's say, bring something from here to this side, or I don't know, along the energy meridians of the body, then I'm not just observing and letting the sankharas come up and, you know, pop in the air.
But, but no matter how long one stays in the stillness of the sitting posture, each time we move, even just to go from sitting to walking to the toilet or to take a meal, that surely is an intentional movement. I intend to go to the toilet, I intend to go to my room, I intend to go to take a meal, and therefore there is an intentional movement, and therefore a change in the flow of the energy.
Maybe the difference is that in most of the books or teachers I heard, they talk about at least the standing Qigong meditation or the Tai Chi form practice.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It begins from concentrating on an energy center, which is practically the, I don't know how to say, Merkaz Kovad, the center of balance
yes.
of the body.
Right.
And moving from out of it to whatever direction you want, or whatever purpose. Or
so you've had some experience. You've sat in the insight meditation course. You've done 3 retreats, 30 days of it, therefore, as well as being here. You have some exposure with yoga. You've had some exposure in Tai Chi. From your experience, do you see significant differences? Never mind the voice of authority outside of yourself. What's your experience?
Well, I never practiced either Tai Chi or yoga. Neither nor, right? In such an intensive course as the Vipassana, so I got a very big benefit out of the courses, because the functia, it goes like Bechizka.
In the power.
Yeah. Alright. So there is a certain intensity taking place in a form of Vipassana teaching. You engage in that and received a lot of benefit from it there. But at the end of 30 days, that means 3 10-day retreats, you said enough. Of that form.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a short period of time. We've had sitting, walking, standing meditations here. There has been, and there is encouragement to engage in yoga individually, or with Rakathet or Lon, to engage in forms of movement, etc. Have you attended any of the morning sessions?
The exercise?
Yeah.
No.
Not attended?
I practiced my own.
All right. In the practice with oneself at the beginning of the day, has it been in conflict with the rest of the day, from your experience?
No, it hasn't.
Has it been a support for the day?
Yes, it kind of combined.
Right.
Well, I practiced the Qigong meditation like I practice Vipassana.
Meaning?
I just concentrated on the breath without any intention, and I just did what I did and observed whatever came up.
So a feature with both, whether one is engaged in standing and in and a certain form or movement, whether we are engaged in the sitting and the form of just the sitting, there is the practice and the application of observation, of being in touch with the body, of noticing levels of energy as well. Sometimes if we feel lots of energy, at other times might feeling rather tired or whatever. Noticing the bodily life, sensations, the vibrations of life, the breathing taking place. From your experience, is meditation just about the witness of bodily sensations, energies, vibrations, physical life? Is that just what it's about, and seeing what comes up and seeing it come and go? Is it just about that?
In the level of when I sit to practice, or as a philosophy and the way of life?
When you sit to practice.
Well, there's this inner dialogue going on all the time.
Go on.
I try to stay equanimous.
Yes.
And
it's a favorite word in the Goenka tradition.
Yes, it is. Never heard it once here, so I thought.
I haven't heard it here. You'll hear it. Anyway, go on. All right. Someone says, I wish to stay with equanimity, equanimous, and present. To what's arising and passing, stay in touch with the events, with the moments there, and then you notice there's some inner dialogue What's the inner dialogue about? What's going on in your good mind?
Well, it's usually those five hindrances. In one way or the other, they surprise me every time, and I'm like out there to get them.
Which is your favorite one?
Doubt.
Doubt. Why am I not surprised? Say a little bit more about this arising of the doubt. What's the biggest doubt you've had since you arrived here?
Well, from what I heard before I came here, and first day doing all the time comparison with the Goenka course,
mm-hmm.
I had the feeling this was like...
It's comparing. We know what with what. Anyway, go on.
Like, now you have AM, PM, and before... Okay. It was like a Goenka light. It's like a Goenka for smokers. I think you're going to get this one deleted.
We are sitting here hoping to shed some light on the situation. And one little bit of light which is being shed is the mind enters into comparing. Oh, this, whatever it is more heavy.
Yeah, serious.
And serious.
Yeah.
Deadly serious.
Yeah.
Exactly. This is appreciative joy. What's that? And this is, what is it? Light. And when the mind has this view, this interpretation, what happens to you? This is a judgment. This, and this is a judgment. And you believe in your comparing. One is for smokers and the other is for non-smokers.
Well, if I'm really going to go step after step,
yeah, you are.
First I said, well, I'd rather be here than go back home for the rest of the holiday.
All right.
Because it's not going to be a holiday back home.
No, all
right. I might as well stay here.
Mm, mm.
And then I said, okay, I'll make some adjustments.
Mm.
Because they don't seem really as if they know themselves what are they going to do in this course. They change the timetables all the time. And
mm-hmm.
What's going on here?
All right.
So I said, okay, I'll take what I want and I leave what I don't want outside, like in the Goenka about the ghee, and he has the cardamom, and take the cardamom out, and someone knows what I'm talking about. And at the end, I wrote a note, and Ron spoke with me.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me, give it a chance. He tried different answers, and then he told me, give it a 2-day trial, and that was what I wanted to do.
All right. So sometimes we look to get back, get away from the story for a little bit, and there is the movement of the mind, and it takes a view, a position. And the position, one or the other, and the memory enters into the present moment and says, oh, when I was there, it was like this. Now I am here, it is like that. And so the mind is carrying yesterday or yesteryear, whatever, into the present. When they collide together, that means past and present, it would generate the doubt. It has to. Is one here for comparing or for something else?
Something else, of course.
What might that something else be? We can spend our whole life comparing one thing and another, and the comparison is based on our state of mind at the time. It's not based on the fact, it's based on the state of mind. What if we're not here for living in comparing Tai Chi, Yoga, Vipassana, the event here, Goenkaji, etc. If we're not here for all of that, what essentially are you here for?
I realized that I came here to get in touch with myself because I had a feeling that I was wrong for the last 20 something years. I was not. Again, I understood it. And then I came here and I realized this is the place where you dissolve yourself.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes the self, you know, manifests in different ways, and of course we appreciate as well your coming up to speak. What's more important than the forms? Forms could be called Tai Chi, Yoga, Vipassana, different teachers, different traditions. What's more important than that as well?
I am.
All right, good. You're right. Fair enough. So, if one says, leaves all of that, rather, to use your word, light, and one comes back to the immediacy of experience, any signal of dissolving of yourself?
Not any parts that I can leave out.
Not any parts that you can leave out. Explain more.
Well, it's like I feel like an onion that is being
peeled. The Buddha used the same metaphor.
Voila. It's probably in
yeah, we know. Parsamkaras, we know. Yeah.
Of the Goenka course.
Yeah.
And up until now, it's things I can really live without.
All right. Okay. So, if as much as possible, and the listening to you so far, one is the comparing. Another is the impact of comparing will generate doubt. Another is your tendency to give too much authority outside of yourself.
That is true.
Yeah, it's true. And that helps and contributes to insight and to understanding of oneself, which is a primary reason for you to be here, as for the rest of us, the same there. Sometimes it's very easy with anything, and including meditation, to identify with intensity. Is there anything more significant than being an intense meditator?
Yeah, going to the army and stuff.
Army is small change.
Because it's a power. Like,
right. We're talking about the meditation world.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes we think, sit, it gets a certain intensity. The self identifies with the intensity and thinks, oh, this is really intense, this is the hardcore, the hard thing, and everything else is lightweight. And the view gets formed easily. Zen is, can be intense. There are plenty of teachings and retreats and monasteries around which makes Goenka courses completely lightweight. Completely for children. So everything can be compared to something else. What's more important in life than being intense about something and being deadly serious about something? What's more important?
Enjoying it.
Alright. Go on.
Getting some benefit from it.
Alright. Could at times intensity block natural enjoyment and natural benefit?
Of course.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Thank you. That means it.
Couple of quiet minutes together. Yes, anyone, anytime. Yes, come. Whichever way you wish. If you sit a bit more to the side, then the voice will carry. Don't have to face everybody with you. With the recording?
Okay.
It's okay. And remembering, as I said, that as a good person, the voice carrying a little bit will help. Mm. Yes.
You were talking the other day about unmaking the ego.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm.
And
I was talking yesterday about unmaking of the ego, or the making of the ego, both, yes.
I didn't quite understand. What is the unmaking of the ego? Is it just a decision to take?
Mm-hmm. Not. Sometimes it can be. There can be for us a looking into an area which is problematic. The self, the I, the me, the my has a lot of dependency in, or a lot of investment in, or projection over. And we look at it, give it full attention, and then out of it may come some resolution. Enough, stop, finish. And therefore we could say some decision has been made, and that manifestation of egotism, whatever it might be about, does begin to change because of the resolution. Sometimes, no guarantee. When you were listening yesterday evening or now, did you have anything particular in mind in terms of ego, I me, my?
Yeah. I feel the ego standing between me and the world.
Yes.
Around, and I really want to get rid of it.
Mm. Nice.
It mustn't be that it's just a button to push.
Mm-hmm.
There must be some kind of practice.
I see. Right. So can you hear that? It's an important and valuable awareness already. sometimes, as you say, we feel there is something between us, so we say, our true nature, whatever I'd say, and the world. Pictures, images, projections, layers, boredom, dullness, stress, pressure, whatever. And it feels like it's between us and the world in some way or other. And as I was speaking with one person today in a one-to-one, sometimes we want to be with the world fully. And because of ego, all these layers and filters, it's like looking at the world through a dirty window. We can see it, but not really sense it. Not really, because these layers there. Then we have to say, well, I want to know myself. I want to know about this self, this ego, these formations that go on there. And reference was just made to the hindrances. The greed, the negativity, the boredom, the restlessness, anxiety, fears, doubts, or whatever. And they hinder, they block, or they cover up, or they obscure the clear seeing. Part of our knowing of ourselves is knowing what kind of areas do we feel most blocked about. What covers us up, so to speak, mostly. So in the time that you've been here, if I may ask, what have you noticed about yourself?
Pride.
Which way? The religions in general have long recognized that pride is the most difficult form of ego to finish with. All right. So, how has the pride been showing itself? What reveals pride? Everybody know the word pride? Conceit. When it gets very strong in English, it's called arrogance. So it can be subtle conceit. Stronger pride. Stronger arrogant. You're in the pride area, are you? Yes, right. Okay. So, what kind of thoughts might arise? What kind of perception or view that shows, well, there's some pride is revealing itself. This is a manifestation of some sense of ego or whatever.
What I mean is my own pride.
Your own pride
is blocking me.
Blocking me.
Standing between me and other people.
Pardon?
Standing between me and other people.
All right. And what confirms that? I mean, for example, you were just sitting there 2 or 3 minutes ago, and you walk up here. There could be pride in sitting here. Oh, look, I'm so brave. I've walked up here, all the rest, they're still there. That could be pride. Any pride in sitting here?
Maybe it's not a good word.
All right. All right.
Maybe I mean more to be proud more in a way that always to look fine.
Always to look fine.
To be, yeah.
Yes.
To look
fine. What's the difference between looking fine, looking well,
yes,
and being proud of looking fine and looking well?
There is a difference. Mm. Different things.
All right.
They connect
plain
somehow, but.
All right. Right.
They both exist.
Okay. So one is looking well, and that may show itself in respect for oneself. It may show itself in appearance. It may show itself in the manner of being. And then the other, as you said, connected with it. And then pride can start to develop. What way would it show itself? It's nice to look well and to feel comfortable with oneself. What would show pride in it?
I think it's more about covering yourself.
Covering.
It's not about showing yourself off. It's
nice. So sometimes we can engage in all sorts of things. Could be clothes. It could be a big pair of sunglasses. It could be a way of talking and
looking smart.
All of that could be a way of hiding behind or hiding inside. And any kind of appearance could be that. So what would help to change that? I don't want to hide behind an appearance. I don't want to. One can have pride in a role. And one has a certain role and there's pride in the role, and then we use it to hide behind. Oh, don't question me, I know. But one might be hiding behind the role. So appearance, roles, all forms of, can be pride and hiding. What's going to change that? We want to live developing more pride. And we want to live with a certain humility. What contributes to humility for you?
Thinking of God.
Pardon?
Thinking of God.
Thinking of God.
Yeah.
Go on. Tell us about God. Thinking of God. Why not? Say a little bit about it. What way thinking of God, turning the attention to God, contributes to our humility.
I'm sorry. It was a bad translation.
Bad translation.
Humiliation.
Humility means to be humble. Understand?
No,
a bit of pride.
Then I was correct.
All right. Yeah. So sometimes we build up a lot of pride and say, okay, look, I want to learn to live a humble life. I keep building my ego up with pride. I want to live a more humble way of life, and then you'll say, one of the ways is to think about God, to turn the attention to God. Say a little bit more.
You may
inspire others.
To feel myself very tiny and insignificant, comparing to
nice.
The whole other beings.
All right, right, fair enough. So, with pride, it's a rather small world, isn't it? You know, we get rather small, me.
Yes.
It's rather small, and it's a precious thing to open up our awareness. To turn our attention to give some thought, reflection, say to God. And then that can contribute to seeing, wow, we're just a tiny little.
It happens twice a year for a few seconds.
Twice a year. One of them is Passover and the other one is Yom Kippur. Is it?
Not necessarily.
All right, good. All right. Why only twice a year? Why
for
not
very short minutes?
Why not twice an hour? What? Sometimes we do. I think it is important that we expand our awareness outside of ourselves, so to speak, and have a deeper sense of something else, bigger than ourselves, to get our life into a little perspective. When you said twice a year, was that literal or metaphorical?
Metaphorical.
What would encourage you here to expand out and keep the attention and the interest in something bigger? So that pride gets smaller as you get a sense of something bigger. What would encourage that for you?
What would?
Yes. Time spent in a very valuable way.
Coming here.
But while you're here, any sense of God while you're here?
When I'm here, I feel a lot of appreciation to the silence.
To the silence. Nice. Beautiful. So the times and moments, and they are precious, when our self is not so much in the center of things, this appreciation, which Leela was speaking to everybody about this afternoon, can begin to come out of us. And that appreciation can go in many directions, and one precious one is the silence. Silence has the opportunity to reveal itself, and in fact reveal more than itself. And the interest in that is less interest in pride. Any other areas working with?
I try to be thankful. But it's not strong enough.
So again, matters of the heart here important. This mudita, appreciative joy, can express itself in a variety of ways, and one is in the thank you. It's in the gratitude.
Yes.
It's in the recognition of the wonder and the beauty of other people. And all of this cultivates expresses something very rather deep and beautiful. So listening to you just now, that the awareness of the filter looking through the glass to the nature, and watching and being clear about that, which we call calling ego or self here. And it is invaluable to remember as well that ego can't see itself. It's the non-seeing, it's the non-ego that sees the ego. And says, go on, ego's coming up, pride, arrogance, boredom, fear, agitation, greediness, selfishness. The non-ego sees the ego. And then sometimes there's a seeing of it, and then that may not be enough. So then there is the exploration of ways to work with it. So when I ask you, lovely to hear, so, when I turn my attention to God, then the pride gets small, and I just feel, well, I'm just a human being living this life on this earth. And that starts to bring us some natural humility. Others may never use the word G-O-D. Lots of people in here, there's no meaning for them, and it's also not necessary. It's what works for us through our experience. Not if there is G-O-D or no G-O-D. It's an old argument. But our experience is what matters and what works. Good, lovely. Thank you.